welcome to the Evolution Exchange Nordics podcast. At Evolution, we are committed to helping people and Nordics tech organizations realize their true potential. Our goal is to develop deep relationships with individuals, building trust to make doing business easier. I'm Jacob Byerly from Evolution, and today I'm your host. I'm joined by Alexander Wernerberg, I'm joined by Jonathan Sterner, and I'm joined by Demetrius Zarkadis. Before we dive deeper into the topic, let's work our way around the room with some short introductions. Can you let the audio listeners who you are, what you do, a little bit of an introduction to your companies, if you will, and then what your biggest passion is currently? Alexander, why don't you kick us off?
Sure, great. Thank you for having me here. My name is Alexander. I'm based in Stockholm, Sweden. I actually grew up in Malmo in the south of Sweden, but I've lived in Stockholm for the last 12 years. I'm the CEO and one of the three co-founders behind a company called Hives.co, which is a platform that's used by organizations to capture insights, ideas, and feedback within their organization in an easy way. So what we're really passionate about and focused on right now is to really make everyone's voice heard and make sure that you can capture all the human input that you need in order to succeed in your decision making and progress as a company.
Perfect. Thank you, Alex. Jonathan, would you like to follow up?
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me as well. Jonathan Sterner, Gothenburg, Sweden, born and raised. My background is in game development, but also in like product development as a whole and stuff like that. I'm one of the co-founders at Insert Coin, or Gwen, which is also our main product focus. It's a product that you can integrate into any digital platform in order to drive your user behaviors and stuff like that. So we have a lot of engagement mechanics, such as point system, level systems, and stuff like that, that will promote certain kind of behaviors based on what your KPIs are. So yeah, we help our customers build more engaging and interesting products.
Perfect. Thank you. And finally, Demetrius.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm Demetrius. I'm born and raised in Greece, where I did my studies as a mechanical engineer. And after, because I loved creating products, I came to Gothenburg, Sweden, to do a master's in product development, where we started Eperoto. It's a legal tech startup where I'm the head of product there. And Eperoto is all about manage the risks in legal dispute. So what we do is we have a software that lawyers can analyze their case, understand what is the potential, what risk you're taking when proceeding to court with a case, and make the best decision possible. That's me, and very curious about our conversation today.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that, guys.
Hi, everyone. This is Chris Bennett here, the Nordics Managing Director here at Evolution. We're committed to doing recruitment in a different way that adds value to both our clients and candidates by providing you with amazing speakers and leading edge discussions on what's going on in the tech scene at the moment. There are three reasons why you should contact me. If you would like to speak on a future podcast, if you are interested in hiring awesome tech, data, product or gaming freelancers for your business, or if you are looking for an exciting new organization to work with, please get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope to hear from you soon. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Now that we've established a little bit of context to each of you, we'll move on to the topic in focus. The topic today is building a new product using innovation, and you've all sort of got a question or statement regarding this topic. As usual, you know, we'll work our way around the room. I'll ask you each to, you know, pose your question out to our audio listeners, maybe the reason behind why you thought it would be interesting to bring it to the panel, and then obviously give us your opinion on the statement that you've bought. Of course, it's very open to conversation, guys, so feel free to jump in. But Alexander, why don't we come to yourself first? You prepared a few different statements for the panel today. Why don't you kick us off with a little bit of an explanation as to why?
Sure, definitely. So I think that one of the main things that I'm really focused on here is that when it comes to innovation and solving or building products with innovation, I think that a lot of the focus to be successful within that is to be able to solve problems in new ways. And I think that's really exciting to see how we can find new solutions to old or new problems. And one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about and also are seeing a lot out there is that if we would say that innovation is about finding ways to solve new or old problems, how do we make sure that we're solving the right problem? And one thing that comes to mind here and what I often see is how often teams and companies are like pretty much running to our solution just because the solution seems to be cool or a really great solution in itself, without taking the time to first dive into what problem they're trying to solve in the first place. And I think that there's two learnings that I've seen is pretty common and really practical way of making sure that people who are building products and driving changes could solve that in a better way. And one thing, or the first thing that I'm seeing a lot out there, is that when we find a solution that we think sounds great, if we could just pretty much like pause for a short moment and try to define what problem we're trying to solve with that solution, who is it a problem for, which situation is it a problem in, and how urgent and important it is. It might be for different people or users out there. And I'm not saying that the original solution here not can be good in itself, but I'm just saying that if we would give ourselves a chance to build a better solution more fitted to the problem, that would probably put us in a better situation. And another interesting thing that I often see out there is that often when people are like, when we're getting an idea or feedback from an employee or a customer and think that's a really stupid one, excuse the language, it's usually a sign of the fact that there's a problem to be solved somewhere. So I think that that's a really interesting signal, that when we are receiving ideas or feedback that we are thinking are stupid or bad, it's usually a signal that there's a problem somewhere behind it that needs to be solved. So if you're receiving feedback on an idea that you think is stupid, a really valuable way to handle that is to ask what problem that's behind that solution. But I would really love to hear the thoughts from like Dimitris and Jonathan as well, that when it comes to making sure that we're solving the right problem, do you have any experience or any thoughts behind how we can make that in a better way?
Yeah, it's very interesting, Alexander, and I think everyone that works with products has always this in mind, like, am I solving the right problem? Is it what I'm supposed to do? And what I have found out is that always go back to your users and understand what is their main goal, what is their drives, and if your solution is very well aligned with what they really want to do in the big picture. Like we make a software for lawyers, and going back to what a lawyer wants to do is very important to understand if your solution is aligned to their end goals. That can be to like be better than their competitors, or look better than their competitor, or whatever is the driving force behind what your users are doing. And as you said, like even this stupid, we can say, feedback is a signal that something is off, something is not very well aligned with your user goals. So it's very, very important to follow and understand why people said that, why people cannot get what you're offering to them, and really try to turn things around and offer a solution that really works for the real problem. Because sometimes we see problems that are problems, but are not the main problem, the big problem that we need to solve.
Jonathan, have you got any sort of particular standpoint on this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really interesting and good question. And I mean, it ties into a lot of things, both what you said, Dimitris, and the main question, Alexander, is like, it kind of chains together with a lot of things that can be a bit difficult when you work with this kind of innovative development of products. So I totally agree that in some ways you need to go back to the intended user, and look at like what do they want, what do they need, and all like what are their desires, what do they wish to fulfill with themselves. But I actually think that is a great method, but I think it can also, and I'm guessing that's kind of like hidden in the question, like where you can like find yourself going in the wrong direction, because maybe your users, like, I mean, the now like infamous quote, like if I had asked what people would have wanted, then they would have said faster horses. I mean, in some way you have to know how to, like, how do you, what do you make of the feedback that you actually get from the thought of the intended user base? And the things that I've somewhere landed in is that there are no like exact correct answers here. So in some ways you need to trust that you have people that has the experience to have good instincts. And also, and this is something I think is really important, like you have to have a team that has strong convictions, but also connected to the convictions, like a sense of accountability. So people that are not afraid to say, well, I believe that this is the right way. Based on all of the things that we see, this is what I feel and believe is the right way to go. And then, but then won't be afraid to say, well, I was wrong in this assumption, but now we know that was wrong. Let's go in this other direction. And connected to that, you would need like, what do you call it? A culture where there is no pride, but maybe more importantly, no guilt. So in order to be able to do this, you need to be able to take accountability, have a strong conviction, and then try it out and just see what the effects are, basically.
You're muted, Jacob.
Thank you so much for that, Demetrius. I was saying thank you everybody for giving a little bit of an answer, and to loop it back to yourself, Alexander, as well, maybe like a real working example of perhaps how you guys have dealt with, you know, not only customer feedback, but also, yeah, to make sure that you are choosing the right path of innovation. Is there something, you know, a first-hand experience perhaps you could share, or maybe a learn that you've had over your time that you wish you had done something a different way?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that going back a little bit to what you mentioned, Jonathan, around the going back to the Henry Ford quote about faster horses, which is very often used and a very famous quote. But I also think that what from my experience, we just a slightly different way in how we tend to ask a question could make us go in completely different directions. Meaning that if we would, for example, ask people, how can we find out ways to faster move from A to B, maybe horses wouldn't be a part of the equation at all when we're coming up with a solution. But if we're just asking people what they want, and they have horses in mind, and the solution today is horses, the solution would probably be to have faster horses. So I don't really have a practical example in our specific case, but I would just clarify that in my experience, I would say that the way we choose to formulate our questions is will definitely affect the outcome and the direction the answers from the users will go in.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And Alex, I think you had a really interesting story that me and you spoke about as well, regarding toasters with different colors. Could you re-explain that story? Because I can't tell it as good as you did the other day.
No, definitely. I've heard a pretty fun story around an electronics company that they were about to release a new bread, like a new toaster for the kitchens and for consumers. And when they gathered like around 100 people in a room, and they asked what the people what color they preferred, many of them chose the bright and vibrant colors like orange, yellow, and so on. But when they later asked the people to bring home a toaster as a thank you for participating in this user testing initiative, most of the people chose to bring home a black or a gray toaster when they brought it home. So I think that one thing that we really need to like steer away from is getting too theoretical when it comes to user testing. We need to find a way to make sure that we put users in a situation where they have some kind of like skin in the game, because otherwise we tend to make things up and even lie sometimes as human beings when we don't have anything on stake, so to speak.
Cool. Yeah, thank you for explaining that. I mean, like I said, you would have probably told it better than me anyway. But I guess sort of following on from that point as well is like, we talk about, you know...
Can I just...
Of course you can. Yeah, of course.
Do that? Cool. So, and I think you're totally correct, Alexander. It's a really nice story. So the way we are able to ask different questions, I mean, in some way that would need to come down to some kind of conviction, right? I mean, you're always in this like fun area when you're putting together some kind of questionnaire and stuff like that. Like, you have some kind of hypothesis of like what you think is the way that people will answer, but you don't want to ask the question in such a way that you are like telling them, well, it's like this, right? I mean, you kind of like try to sneak your question in a direction to find out if you are correct in your assumption without actually asking the question. And I think it's really interesting that what you're saying, like maybe we, instead of asking them, we would want to find a way to see if our assumption is correct in what they're doing. But in some way it comes down to like, if you don't have any conviction or anything that you like believe is the case, I mean, why not ask open questions then? But we know that will get you to the good meat of the stuff in our case. I mean, in order to be able to ask more interesting questions, you need to have some kind of conviction of what you want to do or what you think might be a wrong way to look at the solution, basically.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, one of the things I hear all the time from different organizations and companies is the usual like we need people to think outside of the box, but the thing is that you need some kind of direction, right? When you're trying to be creative, because the usual situation is that they want people to think outside of the box, but they're not even giving people a box to think about. Like they're not even giving them a box to think outside of, meaning that it pretty much just creates confusion when it comes to creativity. If you're just like, hey, come up with whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, to go back to the original point I was going to make as well, is like we've spoken about, you know, the need for this user feedback. But again, we can loop back to you, Alexander, and get everybody else's opinion. But in your opinion, how do we actually avoid getting the wrong insights? And what process do we put in place to make sure that we're choosing the right ones to build an innovative product around?
I think that there's a few things out there. I think that one of the things is going back to really dive deep into what problem that needs to be solved, because users and customers are not always the best at coming up with the best solution, but they are usually the best ones to tell us what their real problems are, and then it's usually up to us to come up with ways to solve that problem, or at least if we have the right problems to solve. So I would probably use like insights from users and customers and employees and people would be great to capture, of course, ideas and feedback, but also like insights around problems and challenges and opportunities that we have that we can work with. But I think that the definitely the most important thing is to, when we're conducting user testing or trying to see how we can improve stuff or change stuff, putting them in a real situation is usually the best way. Putting them in a situation where there's some kind of skin in the game, usually the best way is to connect that to some kind of like money as well, because if people are willing to pay for something, we're usually on the right track.
Perfect. I mean, Demetrius, have you got any sort of opinion on this as well?
Yeah, I agree with Alexander and Jonathan about this approach of not just asking users, but make them do something, make them see if in real life would you use this, like, or use it now with a customer, like to understand really if what you made is beneficial for them. And it's very easy to get what is wrong with what you're doing, but it's very hard to get like what you should do next. And this comes back to what Jonathan said about following also your instinct, your the team insights about solving a problem and trying to be better and better. So yeah, in our situation, we try very early to make our users really use something new and see what would happen in real life. Will they actually use it towards their clients? Because we work with lawyers. It's not, we sell to lawyers, but the end product, our end customers is our lawyers' clients. So would you be able to present this to your client? This is the hard questions that we ask. And this is where we see the reality come back to us and see if what we make makes sense for our users that are the lawyers. So yes, we try to follow this approach. It's not always easy to do, but yeah, I think it's a good way to find out if what you made makes sense for your client or not.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Demetrios. And I guess this is an open question that I've kind of come up with just based off of listening to you guys, but we've spoken so much about the user feedback and how that affects innovation, but is that the only characteristic? Is that the only determining factor when it comes to innovation, or is there other external variables that we consider when having innovative talks and creating something new? I guess we can come to Jonathan first, and then if you guys all have an idea, then feel free to share.
Yeah, cool. I mean, the easy answer to that question is no. I mean, of course, there are a lot of different input sources, and you should consider them all. I mean, we tend to come back to user feedback, I think, because at the end of the day, someone is going to use your product. And if the one who is going to use your product doesn't get it or doesn't want to do that, then it doesn't matter how good technically or technically it is. I mean, it needs to be something that solves a problem in reality, basically. But I would say that you should treat, we might come in a bit more on that later, but you should treat user feedback as any type of input. I mean, it is one in many like sources of input. And at the end of the day, it might be one of the most important sources of input when it comes to at least, would you use this? For us, like when we work with driving user engagement, I mean, the whole thing about our product is that we help our clients do something they don't know how to do. I mean, you shouldn't need to be an expert in user behavior to use a product that will help you to drive user behavior. That's like our value. If we don't help you answer those questions, then we are not doing our job. So in some ways, the thing we need to be able to understand is how do our customers want to work with user behavior, not necessarily how you do the behavior change in the first place. So I mean, you need to be a bit mindful about what you want to know from your users and what things you need to be able to help them with without them asking, basically.
Oh, and in your opinion, you know, what other variables are you bringing into your talks around innovation at Hives, Alexander?
I think that when it comes to innovation or change or just making progress in any kind of way, I think that it could be driven from, as we say, user feedback, or it could be like challenge or problem driven change or progress or innovation, but it might as well be technology driven. Just look at like the rise of AI in all products and industries right now. That's a pretty clear technology driven way of moving forward, meaning that the problem hasn't really changed that much. It's just suddenly there's a technology that are enabling us to solve stuff in a very different way. So I would just I just want to like clarify that in my opinion it might as well be driven from a technology point of view and from an opportunity as from a challenge or user feedback.
And finally, yeah, Demetrius, coming to you. You work in a much different sector to perhaps the other two panels. Is there anything that hasn't been mentioned in terms of what is a determining factor for yourself and Eporoto?
Yes, like for us, like we think that innovation is very well aligned with timing. So many times there were so much potential out there, technological things or whatever you can imagine, but there were no products that could take advantage of this technology and be adopted. In our case, the theory that we are using, decision analysis, is out there for 60, 70 years, but we still see today that it's not adopted. And I think the difference that we can make is that take some innovation, take AI, take whatever is innovation today, and serve it in a very good way to our users. Give them a user-friendly, an easy way to take advantage of this innovation to really transform their lives and their work or anything that this innovation can be used for. For example, Apple didn't invent many things. They used inventions out there, but they made it into a very good package that made the iPhone so successful today. So you don't really, you have to use innovation in a user-friendly way. This is when innovation really works for the people. So this is what we try to do. And what I've learned is that it needs time. It needs a lot of time for people to change how they look things and proceed. But once you use something that is really transforming your work or your life, you never go back. So it's about finding the value. Yeah.
Brilliant. Perfect. Well, I mean, thanks for bringing that question to the panel, Alexander. It sparked up a real conversation there, and I feel like we've definitely got some insights out of it. Why don't we move on to yourself, Jonathan? Obviously, you've prepared a question as well for the panel. So why don't you talk our audio listeners again through the panel and the question that you've bought, and maybe explain why you've bought it, and yeah, give us a little bit of an answer as to what it is.
Absolutely. So a bit of background first. When we founded InstantCoin back in the day, we worked a lot very broadly with building engaging products for customers, and more on a project by project basis. So someone reached out to us and telling, well, we have an app, it has some usage, but we see that users come in and then maybe they do some things, but then everybody churns and leaves the app after a few days. What can we do? And then based on our expertise and stuff like that, we made an analysis looking at what can we do, what kind of things can we learn from other types of solutions, and then put forward a strategy. And in some cases also we built that thing for the customer. And I mean, that was over 10 years ago, we started doing those kind of things. But as time went by, we also saw that the API market started to be introduced, and people became more and more used to actually integrating third-party systems into their solutions. And we started to look at, how could we offer, because we saw that a lot of the things that we use in different kinds of projects are actually common things. At the end of the day, it's a human that wants to use the product. It's a human behavior that we are working with. How could we package this in some way that we could actually make it possible for our customers to integrate and build these kinds of engagement systems themselves? So from our background, then we started the innovation process of actually building that kind of product. And after some time, we saw that, this works. It's great. People use it. People love it. Stuff like that. And after a while, we started to just get the feeling that, at what point should we stop innovating on this problem? Not stop innovating at all, but from the starting point, I mean, it was an innovation effort. But at some point, we felt like maybe this shouldn't be primarily an innovation effort, but more of a day-to-day product development effort supported by innovation. And it's one of those questions that I like thought about over the years, like, how do you identify when it's time to go from like innovation driven development to innovation supported development? Because what we felt was that if we keep innovating here, maybe we will just like make like same but different, basically. Maybe we innovate not forward, but just like making it different, but not more valuable. So in that case, it's very hard to let the innovation department basically control the roadmap. Like, at what point should the roadmap start to be controlled by the product team instead, and then just gain input from innovation, if you understand what I mean? So yeah, and it's one of those questions that I haven't really actually gotten a straight answer to on my own. It's like a mixture of like, of course, if you would reach true clear-cut product market fit, sure. I mean, then we know that this does what it's supposed to do, and we can start to just like look at maybe new ways of doing it. But and also, of course, retrospectively, you could look at, oh, a year ago, we noticed that we have the last year, we have noticed that we are not as effective as we have been before because we have just been cycling innovation over and over again. But that, I mean, you don't want to do that for a year and then notice that you should have switched over to product driven. So yeah, that's kind of the question that I still look for an answer to.
Oh, I guess this is the time where we open it up and try and get some feedback from yourself, Alex, or yourself, Demetrius. Obviously, we're talking about the timing here of when does the balance between innovation and product, who takes over at what point? Of course, Alexander, in your experience, is there a time frame, or what do you think about this?
Sure, no, I think that the wording you chose as well, Jonathan, the difference between innovation driven and innovation supported, was a really great way of putting words to it. Because if I would say that, you know, like, if innovation is about solving problems in a new way, I don't think that we should ever stop innovate, because if we could find new ways of solving problems in a better way, we should probably do that, even when it's a more mature product. And I can grab a practical example. As we were talking about before, AI, in our case, that has been a game changer, for many others, of course, as well. But in our case, our customers are collecting a lot of input from people based on free text. And not that long ago, it was really time consuming to make conclusions and summaries based on free text. But now with AI, we can let our customers collect input in a free text format at pretty much any volume and quantity, and still make conclusions and summaries with pretty much just the click of a button. But at the same time, of course, you know, larger products can't just change everything all the time. That would make their users really frustrated and have a user base going crazy. Like, if, for example, if like Slack, as we are big users of, as many other companies, if they would change everything every month, people would go crazy. They just want Slack to work as they are used to using it. But some amount of innovation should probably always be a part of the more ongoing support and improvement of a product, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's very interesting, Alexander and Jonathan. I'm thinking that, as you said, innovation cannot stop. But coming back to what we described before, like, what is the problem that we are solving? And maybe we should ask the question, will innovation help us solve the problem? Do we need more innovation, or should we just formulate better the problem and work around the problem? For example, if you create an algorithm and you want to make it faster, you make it faster, faster, faster. At some point, maybe you want people to use your algorithm and not continue making it faster. So it's a balance of, okay, you bring innovation, you try to make this innovation work for people, and after, when people use it, then it's time to for a new cycle of innovation, bring more value to the users, rebuild and innovate again. So I think it never stops, but there are periods of like trying a lot to innovate, make things better, and after a period of trying to make this innovation used, and after another cycle of innovate and adopt and keep going. This is what we do at Eperoto. We bring innovation. We see how well it went. We try to innovate more and more and build on that. And if you can do that in short cycles, I think it's optimal.
And going back to what you just mentioned, Dimitri, is like that if our like main mission as product people or a company is to bring value to the users, I also want to say that in my experience, innovation is more of an outcome than a way of working, meaning that if we are striving to solve problems or creating a better value or higher value for our customers or the people using our product, sometimes it could lead to smaller changes. Sometimes it could be completely disruptive innovations. Sometimes it could pretty much only be like continuous improvement and moving forward with small steps every day. But I think that if we just tend to focus on how we can create a better value every day, sometimes it will become innovation as a solution, but most of the days it will be just making progress.
Perfect. I mean, I guess I have a kind of a follow-up question for you guys then about that as well. I mean, we've just spoken about the complete sort of balance of whether it's product's responsibility, is it an innovation team, whatever it might be, but is there signs or something specific within a product lifecycle that would suggest a ramp up or a descale of innovation? Jonathan, you've got your hand raised as well. Perhaps you want to loop back to the last point, and then maybe we can continue with this one.
Yeah, of course. So I think my thinking is this. So I totally agree with you that, I mean, you should never have no innovation, because I mean it's kind of a method it's a practice to actually come to new insights and stuff like that. But it's a many answers to what is innovation, but in some ways it's closely connected to doing something new, at least, and not just like maintaining what is. So doing something new basically, and just to keep it very like down to basics, at some point the tech department will get fed up with just doing new stuff and not actually working on making the things that are like better and just improving on it also. I mean, maybe we should never like stop doing new stuff if we can find valuable new stuff to do, of course. But early on, we have nothing. So everything is new, which is cool. So there is a lot of an innovation when you start out and like everything is possible, at least conceptually, and like you find new things to do and you add to your like product and stuff like that. But at some point, and I don't know where that point is, you need to start thinking maybe we should not prioritize adding new things only, but focus more on making what we think works better, basically. And that's kind of like the point I'm looking for, but I think it might be very hard to know like what that, an indication of like, yes, we're there now.
Do you think perhaps then it's a level of profitability of a product that would suggest, okay, we've done something right here now, let's let it maintain on a flat course, let's let it maintain linear? Or is there another point where perhaps there's something more concrete that you look at and you think, right, okay, we can leave it here, or we need to ramp this up now?
Well, I would actually say no. I know a lot of very profitable products that could use a lot of innovation. So it could only be if you are very profitable, because there are a lot of profitable whole markets that hasn't done anything new in like decades. And that it couldn't be that there isn't anything new to do at all. But I mean, so it couldn't only be your profitability, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, Demetrius, you seem like the person to speak to about this type of an industry. I mean, the legal industry is one of those ones where there really isn't so much new innovation coming out all the time. So in your perspective, would you got anything to add to that?
Yeah, exactly. We're in an industry where it's very, very slow, very conservative in innovation. So any change, if a small change, will be a big change to people in the legal industry. And exactly, that's why I was more focused on, okay, you made something innovative, how will people use it? How to make sure that what you made will really create value to people. So that's why I said, build innovation and try really, really to work with how to make the innovation work for people and after innovate again, or but for sure never stop innovating. And there is no cutoff point. I think always, even the profitable companies, they have a risk. We have seen huge companies fail because something new came on and they lost all their clients. It doesn't mean that because you're profitable you will last forever and you will be continuous being profitable. Even Microsoft, like, even huge organizations are in a risk if they stop innovating. So you should never stop, but always make sure that you make innovation, just not just to make innovation, but to bring value, as Alexander said, back to your users.
Perfect. And finally, I mean, Alexander, have you got anything you'd want to add in this, in terms of, you know, like I said, within this product life cycle or the journey that we go on, in your opinion, is there a point that would suggest a change in amounts of innovation?
I don't think that there's a specific point. I think that's more of a moving point or moving goal, so to speak, in this sense. I think that every company and every team needs to find a way of what they're spending time on, how they are spending their time. It could be a solution when they are like agreeing in a product team that we should spend, like, let's say 70% of our time on keeping the product up to date and really stable and delivering the value that we've promised. Maybe we should spend 20% of the time in coming up with new ways of doing things in the same product, and maybe we should spend 10% of the time with completely disruptive new ways of solving things. So I don't think that there's a universal solution to this, and that's why it's such a hard question or such a hard challenge to solve. But I really appreciate the thought from you, Jonathan, because I think that pretty much every product team and every company is struggling with finding this point. But I think it in my experience that's fairly individual from team to team or from product to product.
Cool. I mean, if there's nothing else to add with this particular point, I mean, Demetrius, we can move on to the question that you've brought to the panel. We slightly touched on it earlier as well, in the sense that we talked about these big companies that find something that's already working and then piggyback innovation off the back of it. You've kind of took it from maybe a more expert researcher, somebody like a university researcher, and using what they produce to shape innovation. Why don't you talk us through the question that you bought, and then maybe how you would use it in Epiroto?
Yeah, sure. So in our case, what we work on, decision theory, is a theory that exists for many, many years. And there are specific people in the world that know how to really use this theory in action. So there are like professors in universities or experts around the world that really know how to do it. There is software out there that people can use to do it, but it wasn't adopted, and there was nothing that was user friendly. And my question today is, how do you really manage to get the knowledge that always exists out there, even if it's university or experts, and how do you approach and get the knowledge and convert it to something of value to your users? So how can you find and make use of this knowledge out there? And specifically in our case, in theory, in product development, you always, when you build something, you go to the experts, you go to the users that will get value directly. But in our case, showing what we did to the experts wasn't always what they liked to see, because they were used in working in a specific way, and we created something different. So if we just hear the feedback from the experts, we would stop doing what we were doing. But we did one step further, and we skipped in a way the experts and go to the next user category to see really if what we make makes sense. So it's about how do you really listen to experts today and what are you doing with their knowledge?
I guess opening it up to the panel then from here, in any of your cases, Alex or Jonathan as well, do you ever outsource to external, you know, knowledge lakes or people that are extremely knowledgeable in a certain sector to shape your innovation? Jonathan?
Yeah, cool. Unmute myself as well. Yeah, so we have worked a lot since a lot of things that we are doing is actually working with behavior science and stuff like that. We actually worked very closely with academia and had like still do work close with academia. Somewhat of like a science department at Ethercoin or Gwen, actually. One of our co-founders, Adam Palmqvist, is a really influential person in this area, in Sweden at least, and also globally. But I would actually say that in some ways what I said before, when we talked about like Alex, the discussion points, you need to treat everything as an input. I mean, it is information. It is something that you get from a source, and you should treat it as information from a source. I think that from our end, the most important lesson from us has been to understand what we can and cannot do with that information. It goes back to what we talked about with user testing. I mean, the user will be good at telling us what they like. And it's more like a gut feeling, like, this feels good when I do this. It doesn't necessarily mean anything else than that. And when we look at like academia and science, I mean, when we have a lot of cases where we have found something to be valid when we look at like research and stuff like that. But when we actually look at the data on our like launched products, it says something totally different. So it can give us like a direction of like what seems to be a good way where to start and test stuff. But then we need to put it to practice. I mean, it can give us a good direction, and based on our expertise and our experience, we can have a strong conviction over whether we feel like this might be true or not. But then we need to put it to the test as any other type of input. We need to try if it actually works. We treat it as a source as any other. Maybe in some cases a bit more a bit more prominent source maybe, but it's a source of information for us to build on, basically.
And I guess finally coming to yourself, Alex, as well, have you got any previous experience with this? Do you see the value or any sort of opinion around this?
I might not be the right person to really add too much here because I don't have any degree whatsoever. but when it comes to my experience, at least, I would say that one thing that's very important in my opinion is to really get real facts and studies and research into the picture. The challenge I often experience behind that is very related to behavior paths, as you were mentioning, Jonathan, and Demetrius also within legal tech, is that if we would, as human beings, always like follow the facts, we would have way less problems in the world that we're having right now. And I think that the reason is that we're not really that fact-driven as human beings. We're more of an experience-driven and behavioral-driven as human beings. Meaning that if we want fact to be set into reality, we need to find a way of people to experience or create emotions and experience and behavioral changes around that. And just look at like, if you would, I heard from someone a couple of weeks ago, if you just like Google number of like printed papers in the world, people are still printing billions of papers every year. Like if we would just go with the fact that we probably don't need to really print that many papers at our office or at home today, we can just use it digitally. We would probably not print that many, but it's more of a behavioral pattern, I would say. So I want fact to become more important in the world, but I think that the way to make fact become a reality is to find ways to create emotions and experiences and change behaviors out there.
Cool, perfect. I mean, is there anything anybody else thought might be cool to bring to the panel on today's episode, or is the conversation come to a plateau?
Cool. I just wanted to say I couldn't agree more with what Alexander said. Just adding that.
I also agree a lot. And like in this example, going back to what should we build? Should we build a printer or a tablet? Maybe we should build something that makes people safe, that my papers will not be lost. Like you print maybe because you're thinking I need to have it on my desk because it won't be lost and I will have it here. But thinking always why people do things and what is the end goal of what we do.
And tabs get lost as well, right, guys? You end up searching 5 minutes for a tab. If you have one piece of paper on your desk, you're like, cool, I know that's there. a really good way to sort of end it off. And I guess before we conclude, I'd like to say thank you to you three all for coming on and sharing your thoughts. Once again, they've been Alexander Werneberg, Jonathan Sterner, and Demetrius Sarkadas. If you want to reach out to them, if you have any questions, I'm sure they're more than welcoming of any LinkedIn messages about furthering the conversation from this panel. And once again, to wrap up here from Evolution's perspective, if you are out there and you are hiring for new technical roles, or you're somebody looking for a new role, feel free to get in touch with us here at Evolution. If you or anyone you know would like to be featured on a future podcast, you can always drop me a message too. Once again, I'm Jacob Byerly, and you can find me on LinkedIn, or equally you can email me at jacob.byerly at evolution-nordics.com, or you can visit us at evolutionjobs.com. Thanks again to all of our guests for coming, and thank you for listening. We hope you can join us all next time.